Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Jack Mitchell, and he'll be answering your questions on the Yakima River, a blue ribbon trout fishery. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the internet. If you'd like to ask Jack a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share a podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it right now. We'd really appreciate it. The content of this broadcast is being copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Jack Mitchell about the Yakima River, a blue ribbon trout fishery. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly, Kodiak, and Bruin rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. Again, that's BigSkyInflatables.com. Before we introduce Jack, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and look for the link under tonight's section that says Register for a Free Drawing. Click on that link to fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a book courtesy of Stackpole Books. Now, here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show, and the question will be about something we talk about during the show. And you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, take notes, use your best typing skills, and hopefully you'll be the proud winner of a Stackpole book at the end of the night. Our guest tonight is Jack Mitchell. Jack started fishing at the early age of one. After high school, Jack went on to college at Washington State University and was on the seven-year plan for his BA in Sport and Recreation Management. While at college, he fished, hunted, and played a large amount of rugby, hence the seven-year plan. Soon after graduation, he found himself in Ellensburg and realized that his love of fishing had brought him to the right place. His fishing trails have led him to Alaska, Canada, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Washington, Oregon, and South America. In Chile, he explored many watersheds and guided in South America for a total of seven winters. His company, The Evening Hatch, started as a small dream in 1988, and since then, the company has grown from a small red pickup, Achilles raft, and doing seasonal 30 trips a year to a year-round operation. Their services range from day trips to all-inclusive programs featuring their post and beam overnight programs in four locations, including Yakima, Upper Columbian, Olympic Peninsula, and the Quijack River in Alaska. He's also spoken on the topic of fly fishing at sports shows, clubs, and seminars. Jack, The Evening Hatch, and his guide staff have been featured in numerous publications over the years, including Northwest Back Roads, The Drake, Gray Sporting Journal, Catch Magazine, Seattle Times, New York Times, American Angler, Fly Fisherman, Northwest Fly Fishing, Trout TV, This Is Fly, Seasons on the Fly, Field and Stream, and Cabela's Outdoor Adventures. Jack, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Oh, thanks for having me, Roger.
Yeah, I'm happy to
be talking fishing, it's a good thing.
It's always a good thing, right? Yeah. That's why I like doing it.
I bet you do. You must. Absolutely.
Yeah, I've done it. What, this is 420 shows for me over since 2006. So yeah, we've talked a lot of fly. I figured that out one day. I can't remember how many hours of talking about fly fishing that was, but probably no more than your average guide does in a year. So yeah. So enlighten us. We've got an international audience, and not everybody knows where the Yakima River is. So can you kind of explain where it is, where it starts, where it ends, that kind of thing?
Sure, it's in central Washington. It would be the headwaters would be about 95 miles east of Seattle, and from that point it travels roughly, well, it travels about 130 more miles or so thereabouts till it joins the Columbia River down in the Tri-Cities of Washington. The Blue Ribbon Trout Stream that we're talking about starts basically 90 miles from Seattle and then terminates at basically the town of Yakima, where at that point the river changes dramatically. And although there are trout down there, it is not as productive as the upper 70 miles of the reach. So, yeah.
So we have 70 miles of, I'm just pulling up a map here I found. Okay, and you say it ends about in the
It
city or
ends
town of
just above the
Yakima?
town of Yakima. Yeah.
Okay.
There
When
is
did you say?
there are trout below Yakima, but the densities become significantly less and less and less, and then ultimately there are no trout, and you end up in a zone that has a lot of smallmouth bass, actually. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's good to know. Yeah, and then eventually it flows into the Columbia. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah,
Yep.
yeah. Okay. When did you first start fishing and then guiding the Yakima?
Well, it was kind of an escalated program. I think I started fishing in 86 and I was guiding in 88. So my time fishing, though, prior to that, I've been fishing all my life. But I started fishing that river in 86 and realized that it was a good opportunity. And in 88, I kind of started the company. Yep.
Okay.
I sold my baseball cards and bought my first raft. Yep.
You're kidding. You must have some good baseball cards.
Yeah, I did
Yeah.
actually. I
Yeah.
had a couple good ones. I probably should have kept those, doggone it. I had the Mickey Mantle first year, and I had a,
Oh.
God, what else? Yeah, I had Bart Starr's first year as a football card, and yeah, I should have probably kept those. Yeah.
Yeah, you
Anyways,
never know. Yeah. Yeah, but it was, I'm sure you've done a lot better with the fly fishing business than the cards would have produced, but who knows, huh? Yeah. You
correct.
never know. You never know. Yeah, it's you don't know what to keep, anymore. But yeah, it's yeah, I ran across a couple of books on my shelves here the other day. I was cleaning out and I said, I better look at these books, see what they're worth. And one was worth $350, another one was $650, and I said, oh well, I should start
Wow.
checking these more before I donate them to the library. So you don't know. But they weren't worth millions, that's for sure. So, what characteristics make the Yakima stand out as a blue ribbon trout fishery?
Well, I would have to say that that river is as good as, or it's better than it was when I started. The average size fish is bigger. There's no doubt about that. That's partly due to the return of salmon to the river, and the salmon biomass grows bigger trout at times, so that kind of adds to its blue ribbon factor. It is a kind of a unique river, in that whatever, I don't know, maybe it's, I should know the exact number of miles, but from where it starts up in the mountains until where it ends at Rosa Dam, it changes face a lot, and it starts as kind of a high mountain stream and ends up in a big broad desert canyon. So it paints a lot of faces in that 65 to 70 miles of river. There are a lot of tributaries that add to the volume, and then of course it is dam controlled, but it's kind of a river that it kind of behaves like a freestone, even though it is a tailwater, if you will. And but I think what has really added over the years, what has really added to it is the salmon biomass. And we have some, our average fish may not be huge, but there are very nice trout in that river, significant fish, yes.
Now, has the salmon runs increased then over the past 10 years or so? Is that
Well,
what I'm hearing?
they have been up and down, but they have added a pretty good biomass to that upper river. That's where they're mostly spawning, in the upper reaches, and that upper river Well, the whole entire river has a bigger fish average now than it used to, and that upper river especially, yeah.
Now, when you say the upper river, are you talking just below the dam then?
So, you know, I would probably, if I were to divide the river into sections, I would call from the Easton Dam down to the Clallam River confluence, I would call that the upper proper. It really has a varied mix of habitat, everything from spawning habitat to big boulders. And then you get into what we call the, I would call the upper flatlands, which is predominantly spawning habitat, and that would be paralleling Clallam there along the town of Clallam. And then you head into what we call the upper canyon, and the upper canyon is not that very, not a lot of spawning habitat in there, but a beautiful canyon, probably one of the most beautiful parts of the river. As you head down that canyon, you end up into the farmlands of the Ellensburg Valley, and that's what we refer to as the farmlands, and there's lots of braided channels in there and great spawning habitat. And once you leave that, you end up in the lower desert canyon, if you will, where there's not as much spawning habitat, but generally, you know, the day in and day out hatches can be pretty prolific down there at times. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then, so we're from Easton to Yakima is the prime fishing?
Yeah. From Easton to Rosa Dam. Easton to Rosa Dam, which is just above Yakima. Yeah.
Oh, just above Yakima. Okay. 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 Good. Good. Yeah. So it sounds like the topography kind of changes too, from a canyon to a flatlands desert. So you get a little bit of a lot of things there. Now, is this primarily a river to float? How would people that, you know, just want to wade make out there? Do you need a boat?
Well, I would say that a boat is a great way to cover water. And however, I mean, strategy-wise, during the low water season, which would be September through mid-May or so, the water is usually, or specifically from September until mid-April, the water's pretty doggone low, and there's some ample wading opportunity at that time of year. As we get into what we call the irrigation season, the water is definitely inflated with water flows and makes it a little bit more difficult to walk wade the river. And, you know, the flows are up, and it makes it a little bit more of a boat game at that time of year.
And is it floatable all year round?
Absolutely. You can float it during low flows. Absolutely.
Can you float it in a hard boat as well as
absolutely. There are parts, the upper proper there, just out of Easton, there's a lot of channels in there, and every year it's a good idea. I would not go down that stretch until you've actually done some recon or done some question or some asking of questions, due to the fact that there's a lot of timber up in there and sometimes there's blockages. And that can also happen in the farmlands near Ellensburg as well. Those two particular stretches have a lot of braided channels and sometimes there's blockages. So it's always good to ask any of the local guide services, including ourselves or any of them. It's always a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what species of fish can we as fly fishers target in the Yakima?
You know, the predominant fish is a rainbow. There's no doubt about it. But there is a pretty good population of cutthroat trout, especially from the farmlands upstream into the upper canyon and up toward the headwaters. Specifically, the upper canyon has a pretty good density of cutthroat, west slope cutthroat. There are a few bull trout in the river here and there, especially in the upper reaches, but not many. So predominant fish would be the rainbows and the cutthroat.
What about the salmon?
Well, there is no specific season for salmon. There's no open season up here to target salmon.
Okay.
You're not, that is a non-targetable fish. Do we hook them inadvertently occasionally? They will eat a big black stonefly occasionally. There's no doubt about that. So that being said, you're not supposed to target them. And, you know, occasionally they get hooked. But
Yeah. Okay. So they're protected then, at least at this point in time, right? Until population increases, maybe? Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Any steelhead get up there?
Certainly. The Yakima is a very complex system. Once you hit the town of Yakima, it doubles and triples in size because there's other rivers that are joining there in Yakima. And so how many steelhead actually come up the wild and scenic part, or the blue ribbon stretch that we're referring to? There's a reasonable amount. I think one of the counts I heard recently was something, don't quote me on this, but something like 400 or 500 fish. But a lot of them actually go up the Natchez arm, which is a different arm of the Yakima in total down. Okay. Yeah, it joins down in the town of Yakima.
Yeah, and that's kind of...
A whole other river, yeah.
A whole other river to fish, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Is that something that your guides fish as well as the Yakima?
We have. It's not a very easy river to drift. There's only a short window of time that you're able to drift it in June, and then there's a lot of walk waiting, and yes, we do it. Yep.
Okay. So you've kind of talked about a lift as far as water flows during the different seasons. How do the fishing conditions and strategies vary across the different seasons? What's your approach?
Well, I would tell you during, from September, when the water is artificially dropped, if you will, they cut off all irrigation coming, and you really need to slow down generally. That's what you kind of need to do a lot. As soon as you get that lower water, you slow down and work water a lot more thoroughly. And as opposed to, for example, in the summer flows, you may even cover, so in the low water season, we might cover, let's just call it 4 to 7 miles of river. In the high water season, I may cover 10 to 20 miles of river, and just looking for the opportunistic fish. You're not really slowing down. You're covering a lot of water, and you're just, like I said, looking for the opportunistic fish with dries and dry droppers and streamers. Yeah.
Where's the uppermost put in?
The highest put in that you can put in is, well, let's just be realistic. It's right there at the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Access, commonly referred to as Ensign Ranch. And that would be up near the town of Easton. And then there's a myriad of put-ins and takeouts from there all the way down to Rosa Dam. Yeah.
So you can kind of pick your float depending on if you want to move slow or fast and how long you want the day, right?
Absolutely. And quite frankly, I mean, there's no way you couldn't float 65 miles of river in a day. I mean, it would take you 5 days. Yeah.
I know some rivers at 15 miles, you've got to really push, and you can't get out and wade or do anything but float to just get to the takeout. So, yeah, that depends on how you want to fish it, but this gives you a lot of opportunities if you want to stop or wade. Oh, hey, let me ask about that. What are the laws in Washington as far as access goes?
Well, there's a lot
Who owns the river and who owns the river bottom? Let's put it that way.
Well, there's a lot of public accesses. There are some private access that you put some money in a drop box and access the river. Some of those have been taken away recently. But there's enough public access from top to bottom that allows spreading out of the pressure, if you will. And the strategy definitely in high flows is to cover a lot of water. However, in the farmlands paralleling Ellensburg, there are a lot of braided channels. And so in the summertime, you can get out and you can wade those channels. And there's certainly a lot more water in there during the summer than there is in low water season. And it makes for some decent wade fishing in the summertime with shorts and sandals or shorts and wading boots and fishing, the side channels and so forth. But the overall strategy in the summertime is covering a lot of water and just looking for the opportunistic fish. Like if you're fishing the upper canyon, which does not have many side channels, you're usually covering anywhere from 10 to 15 miles of river. Same with the lower canyon.
Okay. But what I'm asking about is river rights. In other words, like in Wyoming, going through private property, the landowner owns the river bottom, so you cannot anchor, you cannot get out and wade.
We do not have those issues. You're able to anchor.
Oh, okay.
And you're able to, we've never had any issues. I suppose some of those islands in the farmlands are private, but people are fishing all through there. They're pretty relaxed rules, if you will, the idea of wading some of those islands is not a problem.
Okay.
Now, if you're walking back into the fields of the farmers, that's a different story. But, you know, if you're fishing in the riverbed, there's no problems with setting anchors and getting out on the islands.
Yeah, because like, and then in Montana, you can anchor and you can wade, but only up to the high river mark, which prohibits you from going on the private property. So every state's got their thing. I just want to know what it was in Washington.
No, you are right. Yeah. It is the high water mark. That is a standard, but the high water mark is pretty big in that basin.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
You can stop for lunch without a problem.
Yeah. Not a problem.
Okay. Jack, give me a chance to take a break here, and we'll be right back and talk more about fishing the Yakima River in Washington. Hang tight.
Sounds
I'll be
good.
Right back. The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming, has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call, and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. Again, that's the uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Jack Mitchell about the Yakima River. If you'd like to ask Jack a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. So, Jack, I always ask my guests what's going on in your fly fishing world. So tell us a bit about your business up there and anything else that you're involved with.
Our business is pretty diverse. We have four lodging, post and beam lodging programs, not on the Yakima. All our fishing on the Yakima are day trips, and we have a little fly shop in Ellensburg, but we have a summer-run steelhead lodging program on the Klickitat River, and we have and that's with the Steelhead Ranch Lodge. And then on the Upper Columbia River, coming right out of Canada, our lodge is called Black Bear Lodge, and it is 8 miles from the Canadian border, and that is a world-class trout fishery there. And then we also do the Olympic Peninsula for winter steelhead. In fact, we just got back from there, and we do that during the prime winter steelhead, wild winter steelhead run, and that's in February and March. And then we also have a lodging program out there on the Olympic Peninsula, and then we have a world-class trout program on the Kwajalein River in Alaska in the fall, and we have a lodge right on the Kwajalein River up there that we operate out of. So we're pretty diverse, and we have an amazing crew of up to about, during prime time and rolling throughout all seasons, that we have about 15 guides working. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, that's terrific. And how was the Olympic Peninsula this year? How were the runs?
Well, if I told you it was as good as last year, I would be fibbing. It was a little spottier this year. Last year was certainly more predictable. This season started out with a bang, and then it kind of got a little spotty. There were some good waves of activity and some dead zones there, but we had a great time out there. We caught some great fish, and, you know, steelhead is steelhead. Sometimes I know a lot of fish came in even after they closed. I've heard stories of a few fish that were seen and coming in even after they closed. So, you know, they come in waves, and but it was a good season. It wasn't as predictable as the last year, but no complaints.
Yeah. Do you think that's changing? Do you think the runs are coming in later overall? I mean, in Washington or Oregon or?
Well, we certainly have this. We're on it based on water conditions, ocean conditions, and all. This is supposed to be an upswing 10-year period, okay? And it has been a pretty good upswing. This year was a little spottier. Like I said, they came in strong in January. January is very good out on the Olympic Peninsula. We usually don't spend a lot of time out there in January. We kind of come in at the end of January. February was reasonable. March was a little bit spotty, and we had some crazy weather. We had and the whole river was as lowest it's been, I think, since 2012. And we had like a foot and a half of snow on the ground for a week and a half, which is abnormal for out there. And then we ended up with, toward the end of the season, with a big water push, and you're always fighting big rain. And so we lost a good week there of prime time with the water coming up and blowing out and so forth. But to answer your question, we have seen upticks. I don't know if in the end this year, if we're seeing an uptick or not. It was hard to decipher what was actually happening this year. But with the ocean conditions and so forth, according to biologists, we are on an upswing for our steelhead. Yeah.
Yeah. What I was wondering, asking more about was, you know, like with water temperatures rising and so forth, you know, global warming kind of things, do you see the run starting or earlier or starting later, that kind of thing?
It's
hard to tell.
No, it's kind of hard to tell because, I mean, out on the Olympic Peninsula, they can come in from January. In fact, back in the day before populations were decreased, they'd be coming in November through April. So there's a variety of bushes of fish through that whole time frame. And so we still see wild fish in December coming in, not as many as we used to. And we still see wild fish coming in April, even though it's closed
okay.
now in April.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wondered, kind of off topic here, but just curious. So share with people your website so that they know how to find you and connect with you.
Well, our website is theeveninghatch.com, and there's a lot of information on there. If you want to learn more about the Yakima River, when you go to our homepage, if you just click on other stuff, there's a link called other stuff and scroll down and there's an article I wrote on about the Yakima, which will cover a lot of the stuff we're talking about today. So, yeah.
Okay, great. Good to know. Okay. All right, let's see here. Oh, a question came in from Bill Thomas in North Carolina. He says, how is the fall fishery after the temps drop?
Well, I would tell you, there are not many rivers that you can find fish keying in on crane flies on the surface. Now, that doesn't mean fish don't eat crane fly larvae, because they do in a lot of rivers. But a lot of rivers do not offer a crane fly adult game, and we do. And it's pretty spectacular, to be honest. So as they drop that river in the fall, not only do we have the crane flies at that time of year, but we have getting toward the end of summer stoneflies, as well as October caddis, and still a few hoppers around. So there's a very good big bug game in September that is it's pretty magical, to be honest. And the crane fly kind of wins. I mean, like I said, you don't find many rivers where fish will key in on the crane fly. They do on the Yakima. And getting a dead drift is not important. What you want to do with that crane fly in September, once the temperatures start to drop, and even though we do have Indian summer weather sometimes in September, the water's dropped, and your goal with that crane fly is to scoot it, really, because if you ever watch the crane fly on the surface, it doesn't sit very often. It's flitting around and, you know, bouncing on the surface and skittering about, and quite frankly, a person can meet with a lot of success by purposefully twitching crane fly patterns, specifically on a downstream mend, if you will, which is counterintuitive to what everybody thinks you should do, right? You should always mend upstream,
right,
or whatever. But yeah.
Hmm.
In addition to the big flies I just talked about, to answer this gentleman's question, is we also have a pretty good blueing olive hatch and mahogany duns in the fall as well. So there are also periods of time, especially as we get into October, where you'll find good pods of fish sipping on small mayflies. So.
Okay. Can you describe the differences in fishing approaches between the upper, middle, and lower sections of the river?
You know, that I would tell you that the upper river definitely has a better green drake hatch. The lower river does not have much of a green drake hatch. Green drakes start around the end of May and go into about the middle of June, toward the end of June, if you will, in the upper reaches. So I would say that if you're looking to fish a green drake hatch on the Yakima, I certainly wouldn't be down in the lower river. I'd be in the upper canyon all the way up to the headwaters of Easton. The dry fly game, everything is a little bit specific based on season, okay? So, for example, okay, in the Upper Canyon, you will find great dry flying for cutthroat during the summertime, during high flows. Now, you might not find a lot of big fish at that time of year, but you may see 75 fish eat your dry fly in a day on a good day, everything from 8 inches to potentially over 20 inches. So that Upper Canyon game during the summer can be really good dry flying. When it comes to the winter fishing, for example, in the farmlands, if I were to choose a place to be in the winter sometimes, I would be definitely in the farmlands, because you'll find a lot of migration of fish coming into the farmlands that are staging to spawn. They're going to spawn in April or May, but they're coming in, they'll move into that prime spawning habitat, you know, during the winter. So you'll find a good population of fish in the farmlands in the winter, and that's a great place to be during the winter. So it's kind of, it's not so much what is the best technique, it's more as what is the best season in those stretches, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I know here in Colorado, there's when the big browns move out of the lake up into the small streams, that's the time to target the big fish. So they're getting ready to spawn as well, just like what you're talking about, the rainbows in the spring. But yeah.
Yeah, one other thing is that with salmon smolts in the river, trust me on this one, a salmon smolt pattern, like, for example, the sparkle minnow is one of the ones we like to use. It is always a good idea to fish a salmon smolt pattern, especially in the early spring to summer time frame. That can be very, very effective. It can even be effective in the fall as well, but, you know, you have a downstream migration of salmon smolt during the spring because they're getting pushed out and going, hopefully getting to the ocean eventually. And the bigger trout will definitely key in on those smolt.
Yeah, interesting, yeah. And then also, what about post-spawn of the salmon? A lot of opportunity for egg patterns then, or?
Well, I would tell you right now, that Upper Canyon, from the top of the Upper Canyon to the headwaters in Easton, it could be like a little Alaska. Now, that window of opportunity is short. It's not, you know, we only have one group of salmon right now really spawning in there in the fall, and that's your fall Chinook, or summer fall Chinook. They're trying to bring back coho into the river as well. But that being said, the major spawn over the last 10 years has been with the end of September and the front end of October of those Chinook, and there's about a week and a half in there when the salmon are on their beds that every trout that is in that area is going to be behind those reds eating eggs. Absolutely, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And my strategy would always be, because I love the swing flies as well, so we would always step into the water below the salmon and swing an egg-sucking bugger, and inevitably you would end up with one or two really good fish, because the big fish sees that bugger come through there, an egg-sucking bugger or an egg-sucking leech, and decides that he's going to eat it before any of the smaller trout. So we would always swing through and pick up one or two good fish and then go back through and nymph the remainder. And at times, there could be quite a few numbers of fish caught below salmon reds. I mean, I don't want to quote numbers, but it could be pretty good.
Yeah.
But that window is only a week and a half, really, and you got to catch it right. Yeah, it's about a week
tight.
And a half. Yeah.
You got to be a local or just happen to be, take your trip the right point in time, that's for sure.
That doesn't mean an egg pattern won't continue to work. It just won't work with as much prolificness. Yeah.
I remember in Alaska on a tributary on the Togiak River, we were fishing for Big Dolly Varden, and we were floating through the Chinook Reds. And then every once in a while, we'd end up just hooking a Chinook in the back or something. Quickly break it off, right? because we didn't want the fish. We didn't want to try to, we weren't fishing with the gear to land a 30-pound fish or something. So. But all those dollies were staged right behind them. Just waiting for those eggs. Yeah, so
absolutely. It's a great food source. There's no doubt about it. And that's one of the reasons why we've seen in that upper reach, well, throughout the river, we've seen a better size average at times of year. One of the in addition to the fall when those salmon are spawning, let's start here in this, let's reverse it and come to the spring. Think about the rainbows that are going to go on the spawn here, right? They're starting to go on the spawn right now. And but prior to spawning, all those big trout are saying, hey, I need to eat as much as I can because shortly here, I'm going to be working my rear off trying to perpetuate the species. And that coincides with our squalla hatch. And so the squalla game can be very good on the Yakima River. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, in the month of March or on any stream in the month of March, you have pretty cold water temps. So don't ever overlook slow water for squalla fishing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you will find, and you do not need to impart much motion for squalla. Squallas are, that stonefly is cold. It's during the cold season. They don't move around much. They're also a very skinny profile. So like, for example, a big bushy fly might work, but a skinny profiled stonefly is usually better and certainly smaller than some of your big summer stoneflies. I mean, a squalla could even be a size 12 and skinny. So like there's a pattern called the unit squalla, which is a pretty skinny profiled pattern. That's one example of a good squalla pattern that could be utilized in the springtime. But you'll find a lot of large fish eating in the early season in March because they're storing up and getting ready to, like I said, perpetuate the species just around the corner. Yeah,
good tip. We got a question from Chuck in Placerville, California. He says, what I've read about the Yakima fishability and water clarity can be highly affected by many factors, weather conditions being one. If I was to plan a trip to the Yakima, when is the pristine time to do so, so that I can maximize my effective fishing time?
Well, you could almost guarantee that in the fall, you're going to have clear water, okay? And I will tell you this, that whenever the water has a little, like in the springtime, when, you know, we start to get freshets and so forth and so on, we just go to doing a lot of nymphing with San Juan worms. I mean, the San Juan worm is it's a deadly tool in the spring because, you know, the water's fluctuating and earthworms get kicked in and it works pretty good. But if he wanted to plan a time that he knew he would have clarity and some optimal fishing, most likely would be, I would say, that September into October timeframe when we're playing the water has dropped and we're fishing the crane flies and the summer stoneflies and the October caddis and then the blue-wing olives. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Time for another break here. When we come back, we'll talk more about fly fishing the Yakima River. So hang tight, folks. Be right back. Discover the power of pure Skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft tackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled Skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead, trout, or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit pureskagit.com or call them at 206-858-8476. Again, that's pureskagit.com or call them at 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Jack Mitchell about the Yakima River, a blue ribbon trout fishery. If you'd like to ask Jack a question, just go to our homepage, Ask About Fly Fishing, and send us your question using that text box. We do have a couple other questions came in here, Jack, off the internet. One was Treg Owings in Moscow, Idaho. He says, I was holding our boat waiting for Ray Wolenzak, who you might know, to shuttle the rigs. When we got into the boats, my feet were covered with very small leeches. I had to have about 100 on me. They rubbed off, but it was gross. So is the leech another good pattern for the Yakima?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. During the summertime, fishing, I mean, we don't do a lot of streamer fishing in the summertime, but I know of a couple good reports last summer where they were fishing leech patterns on dry lines and just light sink tips and doing quite well. There are leeches in the river, and the name Ray Wozak is familiar. I know that name, his friend, so leech is definitely a great fly for the river, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Another question from Nathan Dettenmeyer in Vancouver, BC. He says, could you elaborate on the best techniques for fishing the Yakima, and could you comment on the growth and productivity of Euro and switch rod swinging on the Yakima?
Part of my staff is swings all the time, year-round on that river. One of my favorite times, the switch rod, or for that matter, little spay rod or trout spay, that river is from November until March. That's one of my favorites. I know it can be cold, but it can be pretty doggone effective during that time frame. But we have crew members and people fishing right in the middle of summer. There are places that people can wade in the summertime. You just have to drift usually to get to those places, utilizing a boat to get to those places during the summertime during high flows. But like I said, during the low water season, for that matter, September through March is a great time to switch rod or trout spay the river. As far as Euro nymphing, is a very good Euro nymph river. One of our guides is an excellent Euro nympher. I don't spend much time doing that technique, but he has met with a lot of success throughout the season. Now, when the water's lower, it's easier. There's no doubt about it. But there's ample places that people can Euro nymph in high water as well. You just need to access it with a boat at that time mostly.
Right, right. Another question came in from Treg. He says, the unit, the fly you had named, is that named after Randy Johnson, or is that a Randy Johnson fly?
You know, I don't know. I don't know that.
Okay.
It's just a small, small skinny squalla pattern that we have used over the years called the unit squalla. Yeah.
Okay. So what do you recommend for equipment? Which for the person, I mean, obviously, if they're going to do some switch rod fishing, you've got that. But if you're not swinging flies like that, what do you recommend for rod weight, lines, and so forth?
Yeah, your go-to rod is a five weight. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That's a good dry fly rod for the river. There is no reason a person couldn't use a three weight with a single dry during a sip fest when you're finding fish rising and utilizing a smaller, delicate presentation. A three weight is a great tool. When you're streamer fishing, I would opt to a six weight generally, or a seven, even a seven weight, but a six weight is usually pretty effective. Now, we do a lot of dry line streamer fishing, but we also will use a streamer tip, or even, you know, a short streamer tip, like a 10-foot sink tip, streamer tip type. There's various companies that have them. Almost every company has a 10-foot streamer tip. That's a great tool on a six weight. If I was going to throw, like, there are times where I might even cover some really big water and use a 200-grain 20-foot tip, and that would probably, you know, the better rod to throw that on would be a seven weight. So depending on what you're doing, if you're fishing a little dry into sipping fish, that three weight, four weight, or five weight is going to be a really good one. If you're hooking a big, you know, chunk of meat and with a big long sink tip, that seven weight is going to be the game. And then, you know, in between, as we discussed.
Yeah.
Hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, I think so. Any specific leader lengths or tippet materials you prefer for Yakima's condition?
Well, the fall is the far and fine of the Yakima. And I will tell you, the Yakima is definitely way more pressured than it was back in the day. But you still can find, you know, a reprieve on the river. It's not like, you know, the lower canyon does get a lot of pressure. There's no doubt about it. But when we are fishing in the fall, the water is generally low and clear, and so our tippets go way down. I mean, when we are nymphing in the fall, and we're nymphing size 18s and 20s sometimes, we're using 5 and 6X fluorocarbon, no doubt about it, okay? And then when you're fishing to a fish, when they're on the surface, you know, definitely 5X and even 6X standard tippet. And then If I'm fishing streamers, you know, I'm using 3X fluorocarbon generally. Yeah, I used to use 2X and 1X, but I think I would opt nowadays with the, you know, with the pressure that we do see in the modern world that we're living in, I would opt to 3X for your normal size streamer. Now, if you're fishing a really big streamer like, you know, a sex dungeon, you're not going to get away with 3X. You're going to need something a little bit more stout, you know, 2X anyways. And then when you're fishing a big dry during the summertime, I'm generally fishing 3X to the big dry. And if I got a dropper on, I'm running 4X fluorocarbon or 5X fluorocarbon. And then,
Wow. Yeah. That's heavy to the big dry, huh? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're in big water. You're looking for an opportunistic. Yeah. If you're fishing I'm talking a big dry, like a size 6.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and yeah. If you're fishing a size 12, then I'd be on a 4X.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's talk more about hatches and flies. Which insect hatches are the most significant on the Yakima, and when do they typically occur? Maybe you could kind of just give us a run through the calendar year and then say, hey, this is one of the big hatches during this time, something like that.
Gwallas in March, March browns in April, salmon flies the end of April, front end of May, and blue wings in amongst all of that right there, okay? And then we have blue wings predominantly mostly in March and April right there. We call them the spring blue wings. And then in May we have our American Granum Mother's Day caddis. And then we go into the PMDs toward the end of May. And then we have our green drakes. And there are some brown drakes as well, but mostly green drakes in the end of May and front end of June. Then we go into our golden stones, which is a kind of a small stonefly hatch on our river. We don't have to see a lot of true golden stones in May and June, the end of May and June. And then we kind of have what I would call a lull, really. I mean, in June we have our PMDs, and then July is kind of a transition month, right? It's not, we still have some PMDs, and we still have this and that, some caddis, but it's kind of that transition. And then toward the end of July, we get into what we call our summer stoneflies, which is probably the most prolific stonefly hatch on our river. And it starts at the end of July and goes all the way into September. And it comes in waves, and the biggest waves will be in August, when they are nocturnal, and the male is wingless. So when he hits the water, he's moving right along. He's running right across the surface, so imparting motion. Yeah, he's a wingless stone. The female's fully winged. And throughout the summer nights, you're still going to have your caddis hatches at the end of the day. And then we hit into what we would call the fall, September. And we are in the remainder of summer stoneflies. We start our fall blue wings, but the fall blue wings really don't start toward the end till the end of September. But we have our crane flies that as we have discussed, and our October caddis. And there's also a fall Cahill, not with any prolificness, but they're there. And then there's the mahogany dun. And that pretty much is your season when it comes to, I didn't talk about any terrestrials. Those would start, you know, basically in May. There's a pretty good flying ant hatch in May. And then terrestrials, the Upper Canyon is a really odd place. If you stomach pump fish in the Upper Canyon during the summer, you're going to find the weirdest, those cutthroat eat the weirdest stuff up there. I mean, I found little leaf hoppers, I mean, literally size 14 or, for that matter, 16 little leaf hoppers, and I found ladybugs in them. It's an oddity in the Upper Canyon. Those cutthroat kind of, they really, really like an ant and a beetle up there in the summer months. If you're able to utilize an ant and a beetle, that's a pretty good thing for those cutthroats in the Upper Canyon. And then, of course, we have our hoppers that start in that time frame and run until, you know, the front end of September there into the middle of September. On our first, believe it or not, on our first frost, I have had pretty good success with bees, them dropping out of the nests because they get too cold. And I have found fish keying in on bees, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was.
Yeah, I know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the ants and beetles are always kind of, if you don't know what else to put on an ant or a beetle, and they seem to work all over the world. Of course, there's, I think ants are the most prolific insect in the world, and there's probably more of them than any other insect in the world. But
yeah, they're like trout candy.
Yeah. When you have overlapping hatches, I mean, like when you have blue-wing olives overlapping with PMDs or something, what kind of strategies do you use in that situation?
I think your best blue wings are March and April and late September, October. If I have blue, that does not mean when the blue wings are overlapping with PMDs that you won't find fish eating the blue wing. You will, but when that PMD hatch starts, those fish will key more on that PMD than they will on the blue wing generally. And that's just a general statement. That's not a for sure 100% what's going to happen, but you know, it's also a bigger fly, so their calorie intake is better with the PMDs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me go to add to what you're just talking about. If there's drakes around, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not, and there's PMDs, I'm going to be throwing the drake.
Drake. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's even more of a meal, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let me take another quick break here, Jack, and we'll talk more about techniques and stuff on the river. So hang tight. We'll be right back. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with the restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Delaware County, New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish in their habitats like the Peacock Bass Study in Miami, Florida. FFI serves as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish, to preserve and to promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying, and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. That's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Jack Mitchell about the Yakima River, a blue ribbon trout fishery. If you'd like to ask Jack a question, go to our homepage, fill out that form, send it in, and we'll try to get it answered for you. Okay, Jack, how do you decide between fishing dries, nymphs, or streamers on a given day?
Well, as we have seen on many western streams, the more pressure. When I first started fishing the river, all we did is fish dries, right? So because there wasn't near as much pressure. And when you start to see more pressure, you tend to end up fishing subsurface more than you do on the surface. That being said, it is apparent that when we have fish eating on the surface, visually eating on the surface, that is a great time to fish a dry. And, you know, to post up and actually tarp, that is a great time to post up and fish a dry to rising fish. And when it comes to searching with a dry fly, like trying to bring a fish to the surface when you're not seeing them rise, that game is definitely one of the techniques that we will use during the summer months when we will cover 15, let's just call it, I'm not kidding, I have done 25-mile runs back in the day where I just told my guests, look, we're going to throw dries all day today, and, you know, if we miss a spot, who cares? I mean, there's about 1,000 more spots coming in this 25 miles of river. Most people can't hang with 25 miles, but that being said, if we're going to cover a lot of water, we don't worry about missing a spot because there's another one coming, and you're looking for opportunistic fish, and not all spots are going to be worthy in high flows. And so we do fish a lot of dries on the move during the summer looking for opportunistic fish, partly because it's easier than throwing nymphs in high water. It just kind of is easier to do it and get it done. During the fall, covering water with a dry fly, other than during the crane fly activity, if we're getting into the time frame where there are fish keying in on blue wings and mahogany duns, our dry fly game becomes a little less prospecting and a lot more, hey, there's a fish, let's try to get him. And, you know, meaning just cruising down the river with a dry fly might, and it will catch you fish, there's no doubt about it, but it won't be as opportunistic as it would have been in the summer. Does that make sense? Or, you know, the opportunistic.
Yeah.
So we end up targeting fish more if we find fish rising with the dry fly in the fall. And in the spring, we can get away with a little bit more prospecting because they're coming off of winter. So March and April, we can prospect a little, specifically March. Once they get into the spawning time frame of April, those fish will, you'll find a very short window sometimes of opportunity in April. A lot of times it's a four-hour window, and they're going to eat in that 4 hours, and then the other time they're going to go back to starting to perpetuate their species. And when there is a March brown hatch, it can be very prolific. You can set your clock by a March brown hatch in April at times. Yeah, you could literally be, you could say, we need to be there at 125 in this ripple, and at 125, they'll start, and they'll be done at 215, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a short window of activity, so hopefully I answered the question. And we, you know, at times we're targeting them when they're rising, and we're actually headhunting, and other times we're prospecting based on the season.
Yeah, yeah. Question came in from Mike in Maple, Ontario. Is a good time of year to throw streamers, and what kind of streamers would you use?
Well, streamers are pretty doggone good year-round on this river based on the salmon smolt, okay? But one of the key times, as we kind of alluded earlier, is that spring, you know, that April until June when the downstream migration of smolt happens, that can be pretty doggone good fishing. April and May can be really good streamer with salmon smolt. But salmon smolt works year-round on this river now. So, but a key time that would be like it would be an optimum time would be that April through June. Yeah.
Okay. Do you ever?
And then, of course, during the winter. Sorry to interrupt you, but during the winter, November through March, I mean, a streamer is a great bet, period. And then the other thing that we didn't talk about is the whitefish spawn. That starts in November, and utilizing a little green egg or chartreuse egg can be very, very effective nymphing in November and December for the whitefish spawn.
Sounds like you need a guide when you come to Yakima. There's a lot going on that river, you know?
There is.
It's not simple, it's really, is it, you know?
Well, the other thing, you know, one of the things about reading water on the Yakima, let's just say the river has 1,200 fish per mile, which is a reasonable estimate, okay? That's not like going to the Missouri that has 5,000 fish per mile or 6,000 fish per mile. So when you're in low water season, which would be, you know, basically September through April, you need to fish grade A water. Don't get lost in ambiguous water because there's only 1,200 fish per mile. So go to the grade A water. Go to the drop-off and the ensuing 15 to 30 feet after that drop-off. Don't go to marginal water because those fish are probably keyed into those optimal zones for food. And remember, there's only 1,200 fish per mile.
Right. Right, yeah, they're in those holding areas where it's optimal, where the food is coming through like a conveyor belt, right?
And exactly. Anything that goes from 6 inches to 2 feet is great optimal water on that river, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that was going to be the next question, really, is how do you identify productive water on the Yakima? So it's the standard, you know, structure, you know, tail outs, head of pools, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, drop-offs. Drop-offs are key. where it goes from a foot to 4 feet deep or a foot to 3 foot deep. Drop-offs are great. Predominant seam lines, specifically where they start, but not... Now, mind you, as things get colder, this will be in a little slower water at times, but look for the water that makes sense. That's grade A from where that grade A water starts, but let's just call it 30 feet below it. And after that, don't get caught in the mire. You know what I mean? Don't get caught in the stuff that is now ambiguous looking, because it will be difficult to find fish in ambiguous looking water on the Yakima, because there isn't as many fish in that river as some rivers. It's a great river, and it's got some amazing fish in it, and they're strong, beautiful trout, but there's, you know, let's just call 1,200 fish per mile. It's not a huge population, so look for the grade A water and fish that grade A water that in that compact zone of the grade A water. Yeah.
Treg wrote in here a question. He says, do you like the purple haze?
Purple haze is a great fall point fly. Yeah. And a spring. For that matter, the whole season, it would be a good, you know, for, if you believe the fish are, you know, looking for smaller drives, that's a great searching point fly, you know, and if I'm fishing in the fall or the spring to pods of fish, and I want to fish, let's say, a small emerging pattern, I put that behind a purple haze is a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. Use that a dry dropper situation there. Okay. What strategies do you use to target the larger, more elusive trout in the river?
Well, seasonally can be, you'll find your average fish prior to, you know, like from March 1 till now, your average fish is pretty good. Okay. And then we're talking seasons now. And then
right.
During a drake catch, you're going to find some... I've seen some crazy stuff on the Yakima River on a drake catch, and I will state again so that the listeners realize that the drake catch does not really happen below the upper canyon much. I mean, there are drakes below the upper canyon, but the upper part of the upper canyon and upstream of that to the headwaters is where the drakes are. And when you have drakes, you will have big fish, so... And then when they're smolt out migrating, you're going to have fish looking for, you know, a big meal deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then and you're going to have some pretty good fish on summer stoneflies. Here's another tip that we haven't talked about. During the heat of summer, our water temps can get warm, you know. I mean, we have seen water temps to 72. You know, we don't like to do that. We impose our own... What do they call it when you get off early? Hoot owl. We impose our own.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The state doesn't usually impose it, but we do it ourselves. We get on early and we get off early. And that does, in the summertime, during August, when the summer stones are hatching, if you get on at 5 in the morning, you're going to see some amazing activity until about 9. And then you're just going to see it start to taper. And by the time noon to 1 runs around, you're like, oh, that's time to get off this river. First of all, our water temps are getting too warm. And second of all, the activity is slowed down. So,
yeah.
And it also coincides with the fact that the summer stones are nocturnal. So the most activity that you'll get with your summer stones are at low light anyways.
Yeah. We were, I was down with my dad and my son fishing the San Juan River in New Mexico, and we found that. We get out early in the morning, but not too early, because like you say, some things don't turn on until the magic hour, right? And then we'd fish till mid-morning, then we go back, have lunch, take a nap, and then we go out and fish till dark. And because the midday just wasn't productive as it was at the beginning or the end. But we always wondered why all the guide boats showed up at a certain time in the morning. You know, it was like a traffic jam, right? So we decided one day to go out, and we'd get out there before all those guide boats then. Well, we did, but nothing was happening. None of the bugs were coming off. And we go, those guides are smarter than they look.
Well, that is certainly indicative. In the spring, there's no reason in March and April, really, there's no reason to get out at 8 in the morning, 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, our water temps in March are 40 to 48 degrees. I mean, we're waiting for things to warm up. So your best activity in March is going to be from 11 to 4, right? And then,
yeah.
And same with a cold fall day. Now,
right.
And conversely, in the summertime, we're looking for the opposite of that. We're looking for colder water temps. We're looking for early in the morning.
Yeah.
After, yeah.
Yeah, the shoulder hours of the
yeah.
day. Yeah. Okay, we're coming up near the end here. How have conservation efforts impacted the health and sustainability of the Yakima?
There's been a lot of groups. It would be hard to list all of them, especially water clarity and water quality being reverted back in on irrigation ditches and so forth. That has been upgraded heavily over the last 15 years. There's a couple river cleanups that people do. There's personally, what I end up doing myself when it comes to conservation is I just donate trips to give money to groups that make that a part of their agenda, you know, to increase habitat.
Auction
so
or
forth.
Something off.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So that they can raise funds to increase water clarity and work on irrigation ditches. And the Native American, the Yakima Indian Nation, is in charge of all the salmon on the river right now. And they're doing a pretty good job of bringing back the salmon into the river, and it's a major goal of theirs. And I don't think we're going to see huge population increases in our trout, but we're going to see nice trout in our river. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing, too. Question came in from Jason Stacy in Kentucky. He says, if someone was wanting to do a DIY trip to the Yakima, what general area would you recommend to go? He didn't say whether he was floating or wading, so it's kind of, I know that's kind of an open-ended question there.
Right. If he's waiting, I would come in the fall, because the fall is the easiest everywhere to get around, and there's certainly a lot of good activity, you know, everything from the upper river salmon spawn to the blueing and mahogany duns of the fall to the crane flies of the fall. It makes things pretty versatile, if you will, throughout the river. I would say that if you ask most of the guys what their favorite time of year is, it's we just got done with it, basically. From March
we
just 1.
Got done with it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. March 1 till now is probably, or March 1 till, let's just call it May 15, because that brings us right into salmon flies as well as the American Granum Hatch. It also covers the March Browns, and it covers our squalla. And summertime is great. Weather, you realize that, you know, your wading access becomes very limited if you're not floating.
Yeah, 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 okay. Can you, we'll make this almost the last question. Can you share a memorable experience or story that highlights some unique aspects of fishing on the Yakima? One of your personal experience or fishing with a guest? Or?
Well, I mean, I would have to say that if you filmed Keith, one of my senior guys, he's been with me since 92, believe that or not, that's a long time.
Wow, yeah.
He and I, in the upper river one time, got into a green drake hatch, and if you would have filmed it, everybody in the world would have been there. The amount of big fish and the activity for 2.5 hours was, you know, it was epic, right? And over the years, we have seen good drake hatches, right, obviously. Our drake fishing is not as good as it used to be. I'm not sure why that is, but it's still there. But that particular time, I think that, I don't like to quote numbers, so I won't quote numbers, but the amount of targetable fish that were over 18 inches was an eye-opener is what it was. It was of another world, actually. And like I said, if you would have filmed it, the world would have been there the next day, I think, yeah.
So over a glass of whiskey and in the bar, you and Keith can say, remember the day of the green drakes, and you'll both know what you're talking about, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. There's a lot of other days I'm sure we could quote, but that one popped in my mind.
Yeah, yeah. Can you recommend any other resources, learning opportunities for anglers looking to deepen their understanding of the Yakima River?
You know, I think that all the competitors I have some pretty good information on their website. So do I. If you go on our
competitors,
everybody's willing to help, right? There's also a book called The Yakima River by Steve Probasco back in the day. And that's a pretty good, the Yakima River Journal is what it was listed as. And then,
oh, yeah, that's those a pretty, series. Yeah,
that was a good little series. If you go to our website, though, and you go to other stuff and then about the Yakima, there literally is about a 8-page article I wrote that covers a lot of what we kind of just talked about in more depth and detail that you can refer to. And you know what? I would always answer a question. Anybody ever calls, I have no problem giving them a jingle back and helping them out. So, yeah.
There you go. There you go, everybody. All right. Well, we got to wrap it up here. But when we return, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited and a book courtesy of Stackpole Books. So hang tight. And that means you too, Jack, because you're going to help me with this question and getting the right answer. So stick with me, and we'll be giving away these prizes in just a minute. The Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit BTT.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's BTT.org. And just a reminder, everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, "What did you think of the show?" Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database. And if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for the next show so you don't miss out on some of the great prizes we have to give away. Now, if you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show and collect your information so that we can deliver your prize to you. So first, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org. flyfishersinternational.org. It's a great place to learn more about the organization and what they do, and a great organization to support. And let's see who our winner for that is going to be. And that is going to be Chuck Reek, California. So congratulations, Chuck. You just got yourself a membership into the Fly Fishers International. Great. Now we're going to give away a membership to Trout Unlimited. And to learn more about Trout Unlimited, go to tu.org. Another great organization to support. And our winner there is Joel Wood in North Dakota. So congratulations, Joel. And both you gentlemen love your prizes, I'm sure. And now we're going to give away a book courtesy of Stackpole Books. I have a list here of books that I can give away. And if you are the lucky winner, I'll send you that list and you can pick one of those books. So this should be an easy one. And I thought it was going to be hard at the beginning, but Jack kind of messed it up for me. You'll see why in a minute. But he talked about three sections of the river, the upper, the middle, and the lower part of the Yakima River. Now, if you wanted to catch the green drake hatch, which section would you target for the green drake hatch to have the most amount of success? So, and hang tight, Jack. Oh, by the way, you have to fill out the, I forgot to tell everybody I do this. Fill out that form on the homepage or a website, put in your name, your location, and your answer. And the first person that gets this correct. Well, come on, Treg. You gave me three answers there. Well, let me ask Jack. Treg's answer is Upper River September, Crane Fly May, June, Green Drakes. I think he just threw a bunch of stuff in there hoping some of that would stick. How about this? This is simple. Upper. Does that work, Jack?
Yes.
That works. Okay. So Corbin Blackford in Houston, you just won a book from Stackpole. So Corbin, would you use that same text box that you answered the question in and send me your address? I have your name and email address, but just send me your shipping address and I'll get, well, I'm sorry, I'll ask for that in the email. This is a bit different because Stackful is not shipping it. I am. So I will email you the list, Corbin, and then you can pick from that. So look for that email tomorrow morning and we can go from there. Well, Jack, hey, that's it for tonight. Thank you so much for being with us. It was a pleasure to talk with you. All those years of knowledge, it was great to tap into that, and I surely appreciate your time with us.
Well, thanks for asking me to be on, and hopefully it was informative enough for someone to learn a few things. Anyways, thanks again, Roger.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hopefully, you've all found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on the top line of our menu. In the archive, you'll find all of our past shows, 420 shows, I believe now, which you can search by keyword or keyword phrase, like Yakima, like Madison River, like Tarpon, like Bonefish, whatever you want to search for, you're going to find great shows with lots of great information on. Our next broadcast will be May 7th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On that show, I'll be interviewing Joe Jackson, and our show will be Do-It-Yourself Fly Fishing Alaska. Joe's been fly fishing in Alaskan waters since 2014. He's unlocked the secrets to do-it-yourself fishing using state highways and roads to catch salmon, trout, Dolly Varden, Arctic char, and Arctic grayling. So join us to learn his tricks to success in the last frontier. Be sure to add this upcoming show to your calendar. Just click on Add to Calendar button below Jack's photo on our homepage, and you'll be all set. We'll add it to your calendar. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, and Ugly Bug Fly Shop, and Watermaster for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.